Well, for our inspiration tonight, let's turn to God's Word and to Daniel chapter 6 again, the story of Daniel and the Lion's Den, as it's usually called. So Daniel chapter 6 and verse 22 will take us our starting point. My God, says Daniel to Darius, my God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king. So in this story so far, we've seen Daniel trapped by a group of corrupt and jealous and Jew-hating, anti-Semitic schemers. He's trapped not for doing wrong, but because the law is wrong, and he's doing right. And the law condemns those who are doing right. It's a bad law. But this is one of the great deliverance stories of the Bible, because what you have here is a man who looks like spending the night inside the stomachs of the members of the pride of lions in the den, instead spends the night with an angel listening to the lion's stomach rumble. And that's verse 22. My God sent his angel and shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me. The lions then get breakfast in the story, and for breakfast they have the schemers themselves and their families. Probably not all 120 satraps, as they were called, and the administrators, but those who were behind this plot, those who in verse 6 went as a group to the king. They, according to Persian law, don't just suffer for their own crimes, but their families suffer for their crimes as well, and they're all fed to the lions. So what is this story about for us? How do we relate to it? How do we take something from it for ourselves? It's more than just a great historical account. It's got to have some bearing on how we live our lives. Well, there's two themes that I'm going to take out of it tonight. I'm going to take out the theme of trust and the theme of submission. Trust and submission. And we're told in verse 23 that no wound was found on Daniel because he had trusted in his God. He had trusted. Do you trust God tonight? And if you trust God, how does it show in your life? In Daniel's life, trust shows in many ways, but here's a couple. First of all, it shows in his service. Daniel, because he trusts God, is aware of his place in the scheme of things. That because of who God is and because of the position God's given to him, God wants Daniel to serve as a good citizen and a good civil servant in Darius's regime, or a minister of state in Darius's regime. Now, that's not something that we as Christians might think is particularly exciting about being a Christian. Like, we want, you know, to do exciting things like shut the mouths of lions. And God actually wants us just to be good citizens as Christians. We live under an administration as well, just like Daniel did. And it's in the news all the time. The administration that has given us Brexit and the administration that's given us devolved government, and so on and so forth. And we don't always think much of the administrations we're under, but we should be jolly thankful that we're not under Darius's administration, because things could be a lot worse than they are in our country. But God wants us, as part of our trust in him, to serve well where we are. Now, this is an Old Testament theme, but it really comes to life in the New Testament. Because the New Testament writers were very conscious, from Jesus indeed, through the apostles, of their position, and of the fact that it was very easy for the authorities to say, look at these Christians, they're rebels. And the New Testament writers went to great lengths to try and get the new Christians to be the very, very best citizens of Rome, so that the Roman authorities could not in any way miscall them for bad conduct as citizens. So you see that in Ephesians 6, for example, where Paul says, slaves, half the Roman Empire were slaves. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. So there's the trust in God bit. You're obeying for Christ's sake. You're obeying your employee for Christ's sake. Obey them not only to win their favour when their eye is on you, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. So you're not just doing it for them, you're doing it for God. And he goes on to say, serve wholeheartedly, as if you were serving the Lord, not people, because you know that the Lord will reward each one of you for whatever good you do, whether you're slave or free. So we seek to be good citizens, and we seek to serve well in our roles in life, because we're really doing it for God. And it's his honour that's at stake. Depending how well we serve in our workplace, or however we serve in our role as citizens in our country, will actually have a great bearing on how Christianity is viewed and how God is viewed. And we want God to be honoured. The apostles say this all over the place. Romans 13, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. Darius's authority, established by God. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. So we're to be the very best citizens, even if the governing authority is a horror, we're still to seek to be the best citizens. Peter says the same thing, 1 Peter 2. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it's God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. So like Daniel, the apostles are saying, out of respect for God and out of trust in him, we seek to be the very best citizens, the very best servants in the roles that we fulfill in our society. And Daniel was accused in verse 13 by the schemers of paying no attention to Darius. That's what they said. They said he paid no attention to Darius. But in verse 24, they're described as men who had falsely accused Daniel. Because Daniel was the most respectful servant of King Darius. Darius knew that. That's why Darius, when Daniel is condemned, is so distressed, so distraught. Because however crazy he was as a king and however despotic, he knew a good man when he saw him. And Daniel was that. And that's what we want to be. You know, we always seek to live under the authority of God and to obey Him, but we seek with that in view to be the very best citizens we can be. We respect our leaders and we respect the privileges we have, like being able to vote. We respect the opportunities we have to access those in leadership and to seek to influence them in a godly way. And we seek to maintain law and order. We're not rebels. We're not people who provoke and promote civil disobedience. So, doesn't mean that Daniel agreed with Darius, but because of his trust in God, he honoured him. And it's got such a strong application this to our own lives today, in our own political climate. Because there's an awful lot of discontent in the UK just now. There's an awful lot of people, many people who feel very entitled to spout about what they think of our leaders in the most disrespectful way that undermines authority and undermines order in our society. But we want to be able to say, as Daniel can at the end of verse 22, "Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O King." We want to be able to say, as far as we're concerned, we've always sought to uphold the rule of law and we've always sought to respect and honour those who are in authority over us. That's what Daniel did, and Darius knew it. So Daniel trusted God. It showed in his service. It showed, secondly, in his submission. Daniel, it says in verse 23, was unscathed because he trusted in his God. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that Daniel believed that God would save him from the lions, and that's why he could keep on praying to God? Did Daniel just keep on praying, knowing that it would mean he'd be caught in their trap, because God had given him a promise that he'd be delivered from the lions? Well, that's possible. But there's another situation quite similar to this in chapter 3 of Daniel. And this time it's Daniel's three friends, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, and they're going to be thrown into a furnace for not worshipping the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. And they're brought before Nebuchadnezzar, who's furious with them, and this is what they say to him: "If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not," they say, "we want you to know, your majesty, we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you set up." So they're saying, you know, in the end we're going to be delivered, but it might not be by us being saved in the furnace. We might perish in the furnace, but even if we perish in the furnace and God doesn't deliver us somehow miraculously from the furnace, we're still not serving your gods. And I think it may be like that with Daniel. Daniel may be approaching the lion's den thinking, well, you know, God can do what he did for Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego those many years ago for me in the lion's den. He can deliver me. But even if he doesn't, I'm still going to keep praying. I'm still going to keep publicly declaring my allegiance to God and my opposition to idolatry and to the worship of man. So Daniel prayed and submitted the outcome to God. He submitted to God. And as it happened in the story, just like with Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, an angel joined Daniel in the place of danger, in the furnace for them, in the lion's den for him. But this is the exception. Most people that end up in this kind of situation, Christians who end up being persecuted for their faith, and whatever the modern equivalent today is of being thrown to the lions, they don't find that they're miraculously delivered at that point. Sometimes. And there are some great biographies out there you can read about that. Most of the time they die. Because as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say to Nebuchadnezzar, he will deliver us. But often the deliverance God brings to his people is through death. The ultimate deliverance for a Christian is death. Because beyond death, no evil can touch us. We will be with God forever. So in that sense, I think, as Hebrews 11 says, Daniel, through faith, shut the mouths of lions. It wasn't that he named and claimed deliverance from the lion's den in a sort of modern prosperity gospel kind of way and said, I'll have that one from you, God, and grabbed it and said, I'm taking my stand on that. I don't think it was like that. I think he said, Lord, whatever you've got in mind here, whether it's a miraculous deliverance or whether I die, I'm going to submit to you and I'm going to serve you. And he submitted and he prayed on. And in this instance, he was saved from death by the angel. But often death is the deliverance. Isaiah 57, the righteous perish, and no one takes it to heart. The devout are taken away, and no one understands that the righteous are taken away to be spared from evil. Those who walk uprightly enter into peace. They will find rest as they lie in death. Death is a deliverance for the Christian. It's a deliverance. You're delivered into the safety of God's eternal care, where no evil, no enemy can ever touch you again. So while we might really want to be spared death in whatever lion's den we face, actually death is deliverance. So do you tonight have a submissive faith that just says to God, God, I'm going to do the right thing before you, in my society, in my home, in my workplace, as a citizen, no matter what people say, and I submit to you the consequences. I think that's Daniel's faith. He's not someone who's trying to dictate to God, God, you've got to save me here, and this is how you're going to do it. That's not submission. He submits to God. And it has a great effect in Darius. Let me just mention that. Darius has only been with Daniel for a few months, and he's already been profoundly impressed by Daniel. That Daniel is a man with a faith that makes him serve well and submit to God. And so Darius is able to say in verse 16, may your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you. That shows how impressed Darius is with Daniel's faith. And again, he's able to say in verse 20 in the morning, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? It's almost like Darius has some kind of faith. And indeed he has. But it's not faith in God. Because Daniel doesn't answer in verse 22, our God sent his angel. He says, my God. He's not your God yet, Darius. He's my God. Daniel knows that Darius has faith, but what Darius's faith is in Daniel's faith. Darius has faith in Daniel's faith. Now that's interesting. You may be someone here tonight who has faith in someone else's faith. And that often happens in families where there's maybe some godly people in the family, but you're not one of them. But because you've got godly people in the family, your parents or your brother or your sister, you kind of feel that's going to be good for you. It's going to help you with God. It won't. It will condemn you more with God. If you don't yourself embrace the faith that the godly people in your family have, their faith will actually condemn you. Because you had so much the more opportunity to embrace faith because they were in your family. So don't be like Darius and just say, you've got faith in their faith. You need personal faith yourself in the living God. So we've thought about Daniel as a man who trusts in God, who serves God and submits to God, and serves well in society and as a civil servant as well. Let's think for a minute about deliverance. What's the story really showing us? And that's, you might think, well, Roddy, it's kind of obvious, isn't it? Well, it's not, actually. What is the story actually for in a Christian age? What's it for us? What do we take from it for ourselves? Here's a few things. Is the story a picture of Jesus? Because some people take it that way. They say, ah, well, you see, Daniel is like Jesus. He stands faithfully, and the pagan authorities condemn him to death. They put him into a place of death, and they roll a stone over the mouth of it. And even the pagan ruler who's in charge can't sleep because of it. It's so like Pontius Pilate and the stone rolled over the tomb of Jesus and so on and so forth. And no wonder, in a way, because God's deliverances often do look like resurrections. Daniel certainly does, because in the morning when they roll the stone back, it's like he's back from the dead. He's alive. And often God works like that in our lives. Ephesians 1, Paul prays that our eyes may be enlightened so that we may know his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly realms. God's power on behalf of the believer, whether that believer is you or me or Daniel, is like resurrection, says Paul. And literally here, Daniel is like raised from the dead. Paul, in another situation, describes his deliverance, 2 Timothy 4, verse 17. I was delivered from the lion's mouth, he says. It's like resurrection. And that is the ultimate way God does deliver people, in resurrection. Remember I said, death is the ultimate deliverance for Christians. But the completeness of that deliverance is when God raises us from the dead into the new world, the new creation. So, it's not surprising if this story kind of looks like Jesus' story. But I don't think that's the point of it. For others, it's a moral lesson. And the moral lesson is, the innocent will ultimately be vindicated. The guilty will ultimately perish. And that's certainly true, because God is judge. But I don't think that's what it's about either. For others, it's a salvation story. Like, God's people, the Jews, or the Christians, are ultimately rescued from the baddies, the Gentiles, or the unbelievers. And that's also true. And it happens here. But again, I don't think that's what the story's really about. What is its place in the Bible? I think its place in the Bible is to show us this. It's to show us how God carries forward his great plan of salvation through the Jewish people. This story is very much part of it. It's about how they are brought from being persecuted hostages in a foreign land to being restored to their homeland, Judah, where the salvation story will then continue and lead to the coming of the Messiah, the Lord Jesus Christ. This is about a crucial point in the story of God's salvation plan for the world. And as in so many places in God's plan, it sometimes all depends on one person. Think about the stories you know. Noah, Abraham, Joseph, Moses, Esther, Mary, Jesus. It all depends on one person at times. Completely. If that one person sins and fails, the whole of God's salvation plan will be seriously set back. As Mordecai, I remember, says to Esther, who's a one person situation there, she's got to do the right thing, or the Jewish people in Persia are going to perish. If you remain silent at this time, he says to her, relief and deliverance from the Jews will arise from another place. Now, God has other ways around. He can work around the failures of individuals. But sometimes, often in fact, in the story we read in the Bible, there comes a point where it all homes in on one person. And that's what's happening here. Daniel is that one person. Remember where the Jews are? They're captives in Persia. Where's the most influential Jew? He's there in the lion's den. He is the key man, because he alone has the ear of the king. And not only that, he alone, as we could see if we studied to chapter 9, at the same time as this, is very aware that the 70 years in captivity are coming to an end. And it's time to go home to Judea, to Judah. And Daniel is the only one who sees all this and has all this opportunity, this privileged position. If he fails at this point, if he's eaten by the lions at this point, then the whole situation is seriously set back for God's world salvation plan. It's that important. But Daniel stood fast. Daniel, like Paul, forgets what behind, strains towards what's ahead, presses on to win the prize for which God has called him heavenward. Now, we ourselves today are well past the point where salvation history on earth depends on one person. It does depend on one person, but that one person is now at the right hand of God, Jesus Christ, the one mediator, the one great high priest. It still all depends on one person getting it right, but that one person is Jesus. Jesus, Hebrews 7:25 says, is able to save to the uttermost, completely, all who come to God through him. It's all about him and him getting it right. So that's really what's happening in this story. This is a story about God's big picture. And how is he gonna get the story that's got to lead to the birth of Jesus out of this really tight corner? And it's through delivering Daniel out of the den of lions. That's really what the story's about, I think. But let's just close by thinking about ourselves. Sometimes it all depends on you. Not the big picture, but a little picture. I know it's always tempting to think in the church that it all depends on the minister. And that has been, I think sadly, a less than positive aspect of the Church of Christ at times. If you had a good minister, your church is sorted. Get a rubbish minister, you're finished. I hope none of us thinks that. Because it depends on you. And it depends on you. As well as depending on me. There are some things that depend on me. Like last week, I had the opportunity to conduct a marriage rededication service in Plockton Church. And none of you met Joanne and James, but I did. And I was the Daniel in that situation. And it was a great privilege. The highlight of the whole thing was meeting them beforehand. After a long email exchange over many months, meeting them beforehand, and in the course of conversation, saying to them, God's forgiveness is free. And in James's mind, the penny dropped. And he actually went, wow! He actually said that in the conversation. I thought, this is great. Like he'd never heard it before. He just had been brought up with the idea that you pay for everything you get in church. Because he just offered me some money for doing the thing. And I said, so, that one depended on me. And I had to try and get it right. If you remember, James and Joanne, they're in Gloucester. They live in Gloucester. And pray for them to go to one of the couple of churches that Dave Mockett told me to recommend to them in Gloucester. and that they'll be blessed using that the Bible that they were presented with as well. That one depended on me, but you've got stories like that. What depended on you in the last few days? On you getting it right as a Christian? Who did you have the chance to share Jesus with that I'll never meet? That depended on you. Sometimes it does all depend on you in a specific situation. And you've got a Darius that you've got to faithfully witness to. So let's each play our part. And let's not be afraid of the lions. The lions are the least of our problem. God has got them under control. Trust God. Serve Him. Serve as a good citizen. Submit to God's purpose and plan. Stay faithful. Tell people about your great deliverer. And even if you are fed to the lions and they have a good meal, you will be instantly delivered from all further trouble and evil forever. And God will ensure that His gospel carries on. As was once said, the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church.